You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast, joined by a very special guest for this episode, a senior writer from The Guardian, Andrew Lawrence. Drew, how are you?
Good. Good, Andy. How are you doing?
I'm great. You are my go-to when I want to talk about things like like F1. I want to get a non-meatball Chicago take on the Bears quarterback situation.
You mean they're not talking about AlphaTauri's name change on the rebrand on the score?
I think they devoted like 4 hours to it today. Yeah. Should we call it Visa Cash App RB? Yeah. Should we just call it RB? Does the RB stand for Racing Bulls? What is the...
I think... I tend to apply NASCAR rules, like when they sort of lard up their event with like the Monster Energy Camping World, blah, blah, blah. I'll just say like second Talladega or, like the Daytona 500. The sponsorship names just completely just wash over me now.
It sounds like just from watching... I watch practice, for God's sakes. They're just going to call him RB.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I've been saying.
Or Visa. You're just going to be... Although, anytime they show the cockpit, it's all Visa. So they're not going to get it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you noticed this, the Red Bulls, their new... One of the sponsors you can see when they show the cockpit is Pepe Jeans.
Is that right?
And it looks a lot like Pepe Jeans, which is all I'm going to think of every time they show the inside of the car.
They want that you to associate them with a snug fit, so they want to be like in that cockpit and all that stuff.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna get to F1, but the people want to hear what you have to say about what the Bears should do with their quarterback situation. Do they? Go ahead. I don't want to even lead you in any direction.
No, man. I'm torn. So I really like Justin. I like that he sort of has like a weird competitive thing with Trevor Lawrence, because he's like, I've been better than this guy my entire life, and then he goes for the only time he was ever better than me was when he went first in the draft. And I like that he still has a chip on his shoulder about all of that and really wants to prove himself. you know, it doesn't also hurt that he's like a fantastic sort of like physical talent. It's hard to judge where his, because to me it's like watching Lamar. Like when I watched Lamar at Louisville, he was almost exclusively a pocket passer. So like when he started running around, I was like, who is this player? And I feel like Fields is going through exact same thing. At Ohio State, all he did was drop back, and now he's having to like rely on sort of like the running and the physical talent and all of that. So I feel like we've only seen the ceiling that we always see because the Bears offensive staff is so incompetent. So I'm just like, you know, maybe in the next regime change, he'll finally get a coordinator who will be able to like tap that, the actual potential. Having said that, I live in Atlanta now. And if the situation were to come to pass that Atlanta trades with the Bears so that they can get Caleb Williams, I feel like it's still a win-win for me. Like I get to see,
I get Justin.
Yeah, I get Justin closer to my actual home, and my native land gets to experiment with, you know, ruining another quarterback. So I feel like, yeah, I can't lose, but in my heart, I would actually like to see Justin succeed in Chicago, because I think if he is as good as I think he is, he's gonna have talent plus a grudge, which I feel like will only magnify the talent and make the Bears like that much better.
All right, that's interesting. I have similar feelings about Justin in that he's the rare Bear quarterback who fans actually don't want to run out of town.
Like, yes.
This is an odd feeling for Bear fans. Usually, anytime there's a chance to get a new quarterback, it's an easy decision. Shove the old bum out of town. We don't want him.
Right.
But Justin is cool.
Yes.
We don't really have cool. We haven't done that since, like, Jim McMahon was the last cool quarterback that Bears had. And, you know, Josh McCown. Yeah, but we had Jay, who had all this talent. We just had to like put up with his Jay.
I feel like Jim Miller might be the only like sort of cool.
Yeah, and then the only time he ever got on an extended run of good play, he flunked a PED test.
Yes. Oh God, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Actually, I guess he had two runs. One, Hugh Douglas slammed him down and separated his shoulder in a playoff game.
Yes.
And then next year he throws up like two 400-yard passing games in a row.
Yes.
And then off to the suspended list. I mean, yeah. I'd have tested him, too, if I was
I totally forgot about that. Yeah, that still smarts.
But, so there's that with Justin. There's also the feeling that under a normal situation, you wouldn't be in a position where you felt you could upgrade from him.
Yes.
So this, you wouldn't worry about it at all. If you were picking eighth and ninth instead of first and ninth, you're just taking two guys to try to make the Bears better.
Right.
But instead, you're sitting there, and last year they were in the exact same situation with the number one pick, and they looked at tiny little Bryce Young, thought that's not going to work, and CJ Stroud, and they decided, okay, if we're going to roll with an Ohio State quarterback, why don't we stick with the guy we've got and see if he's good?
Yeah. Let's stick with the guy who played. Who was playing above him?
Yeah.
Right? Did they briefly overlap?
Yeah, like, CJ would have been his backup.
His backup last year. Yeah.
And so they did that, and not only that, they made a trade to get him a weapon. He actually had a wide receiver to throw to, and that worked. DJ Moore was really good.
Worked really well.
And now they're there again. And now it's okay. We got another year out of Justin, and I'd like to give the Bears the benefit of the doubt, but why would I, given their history, because they're with him every day, they have a gauge on how much of his struggles were him and how much of his struggles were Luke Getsy.
Right.
And we don't really know that. It would be very interesting if he gets traded to the Raiders. Him and Getsy are together again. And both of them
I thought
it was your fault. Well, that was your fault. We're not going to find out now. We're just both, it's going to be the same old shit in just a different town. And so then there's
until
other things.
Until Antonio Pierce grinds one of them down.
Antonio, who said he hired Getsy because the Bears ran the ball all over the Raiders. And he goes, I don't even know who their quarterback was. Because it was our
great, it was the third stringer. Yeah.
It was our great arm wrestler.
Yeah.
But the Bears are also in a situation where if they feel like they can upgrade, then you could get younger, you could get cheaper, and you could continue to build. They've really done a pretty nice job over the last 2 years of actually adding talent to the roster. I think they feel like they could do it again. If you keep Justin, you get him cheap again this year, so it doesn't affect you. You can go nuts in free agency this year. Next year, he starts to get a little more expensive. $25 million for an NFL starting quarterback, though, that's not even middle of the market money.
Right.
And
especially
then you're looking
cap
at
going up each year, it becomes easier to bear.
Then you're looking at probably having to pay him $40 million a year after that.
Yeah.
And part of that would be, his negotiating would be, of course you're going to pay me that money. You passed on C.J. Stroud for me. You passed on Caleb Williams for me and Drake May. You didn't take any of those guys. So clearly, you know I'm a top-of-the-league quarterback, even if his stats don't improve. I can just tell you, as somebody who watched every Bear game with obsessive detail.
Yes, please.
There are, the sheer amount of cool plays, things he does that nobody else can do. Every time he does it, you think, oh, he's the greatest quarterback ever. He could do this all the time.
Yeah.
And then there are times when you are literally sitting in your chair screaming at him to throw the ball. Yeah. And he's not even – some quarterbacks hold the ball and they're looking to go deep. They're waiting for something to develop. A lot of times he's holding it and we have no idea why. There is nobody going deep. He's not waiting for anybody. He's just not throwing it. And the thing I don't know is actually – I think part of the reason CJ went second instead of first last year was Justin.
Yeah.
There was this feeling that Ohio State quarterbacks, because the offense is geared to take the deep shot all the time, they get in this bad habit of holding the ball because their line's going to be able to block for 8 seconds and their receivers are going to get open eventually. And it develops a bad habit that they can't shake in the NFL because none of these guys have been worth a damn. And then CJ comes out and that's not an issue at all. That ball needs to be there. It's there on time. We don't
reading
get
it perfectly.
A lot of...
He's making guys. Yeah. He's, whoever the rookie receiver was for them that went down two thirds of the way through the season.
Tank.
Yeah, was having an awesome season. Horrible injury, and CJ's like in tears on the podium, being like, this guy was amazing. Nobody had heard of this guy or was looking for this guy until those two paired up. Yeah, gotcha.
And we saw very little of that from Justin. Very little tight window throws where that guy's maybe open, but I'm going to throw it there and he's going to get there. And some of that could be the guys he's throwing to.
Yeah.
That's been the issue with this the whole time is, what are we evaluating here? And I think there's a foregone conclusion now that they'll trade him and they'll go with Caleb because Caleb is more of what you think the blueprint to win in the NFL is.
Right.
A quarterback who can make all the throws, who could throw guys open, who could do that kind of stuff.
Scans the field, is, looking off safeties and linebackers and
because it admittedly he has some ridiculous tape.
Yeah.
Like there are throws he makes that it's just,
But my thing with Caleb is, he doesn't want to come to Chicago. He wants to stay with Cliff. He's angling to go to Washington. His dad, his dad is like a strong voice, which he should be, but kept him out, kept him in school last year. And, he had an all right season, wasn't his Heisman season. But of the college football that I watched last year, which was, a fair amount of SEC football, like the quarterback that blew me away was LSU's quarterback who won the Heisman. And I'm like, if you're going to wait for a guy, wait for that guy. Cause he's truly ridiculous. No disrespect to Caleb, but I just, because he had an awesome season when Caleb had like a baseline season. He stuck out more to me.
Yeah, it's very the whole USC thing is hard to figure for similar reasons why it's, if you were only evaluating Caleb on last season, it's a lot like trying to evaluate Justin on his last season.
Yeah.
You know, the USC, their offensive line was not nearly as good as it had been the year before. He didn't have nearly the weapons he had before. The best receiver he had was Jerry Rice's son, who's like a fourth-round draft pick, maybe.
Yeah.
And the defense was horrible. So it was part of the reason that he went for so many big plays is they had to score, literally, they had to score 40 points to win a game.
Yeah, yeah.
And you worry that.
Barely beat Colorado, which was giving up. Giving up as much as it was scoring.
So you worry about, they say, okay, I understand that. You worry then, how easy is it to flip the switch back? Do you just do that for a year and then that's just who you are now? It's like, hey, this is fun. Right. I'm just going to fire this all over. The Cliff Kingsbury thing is funny to me because Cliff was not the offensive coordinator. No. He wasn't the quarterback coach. He was the offensive consultant.
Right, yeah.
He was there for 1 year.
Yeah.
And apparently, you know, to hear Cliff tell it to people when he's trying to get a job, they're super tight.
Yeah.
And Caleb's going to want to, you know, tell the Bears to fuck off because he's coming to D.C. where they've got, you know, they've not
they got a ton going on over there. Yes. Right?
Oh, it's a great situation to go into.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I don't want to play for a defensive-minded head coach. Well, you want to meet the guy in D.C.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So they did not hire Ben Johnson. That's not who you're going to get. So it'll be interesting. And so then there's other ideas then. People are thinking, you know, the interview the Bears had, I guess, tonight with Caleb, the one-on-one will go a long way to whether they feel like, you know, they want to work with him, they can sign him, they can do all the other stuff. You know, if one thing you would be worried about if you're Ryan Poles is Roquan Smith is a Raven, largely because Roquan decided he was going to be his own agent. And they could not convince him that the deal they were offering him was a good deal. And Caleb is not going to hire an agent.
No.
It's going to be Caleb and his dad are going to figure it out. Although, the thing, Caleb, the whole thing around Caleb is much more sophisticated than anything Roquan had. Like, Caleb has a marketing team. Caleb already has Caleb has had made NIL money and knows how he's got a Dr. Pepper sponsorship and an EA Sports sponsor. You know, he probably has a more realistic idea. Plus, it's a rookie contract. I mean, Roquan did hold out because there was offset language that he didn't like. And he was the last, by far the last rookie to sign when he was a rookie. So he's not going to play for the Bears if they pick him. That, you know, he may be like, screw this, I'm only going to be here for one contract. But he's not going to play for the Bears if they pick him. You know, so then you get the galaxy brains. It's like, okay, well, if they like... And you would do this. If they decide they'd rather have Drake May, then you trade with Washington because you only have to move down to two. You're still going to get Drake. You get Washington's one this year. You get their two this year. The Bears don't have a two because they traded it for Montez Sweat, which was an excellent trade. And then maybe you get something next year, all for the low, low price of still drafting the guy you wanted to in the first place. Or maybe you take Jaden Daniels instead. Or maybe you just keep Justin and then you trade that pick. You know, there's mock drafts where the Bears trade that first round pick three times. You know, they go from one to two, and they go from like two to four, and then they go from four to, it's like, let's get a little more realistic than that.
Yeah, let's study our history here a little bit of this team and its appetite for risk before we have them trading five times in the first round.
I don't know if you've seen Matt Eberflus lately. Have you seen the Flus?
No, I haven't seen him.
So he's got, Flus has got a new haircut and a beard.
Oh boy.
He looks a lot like Cliff Kingsbury. I think he's trying to trick Caleb into thinking that he's Cliff. But it's clear, I think he got the glow up just to appeal to Caleb, to show how cool he is.
Interesting.
I will
did he paint his nails too to be like,
I'm
cool.
On his nails.
Yeah.
I heard somebody explain that away. They're like, well, big deal, because his mom is like a nail technician.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, does she put F Utah on all the clients' fingernails? Is that like
only if
thing?
They ask? Only if they ask. Or they're running a special. Yeah.
So it will be very interesting what the Bears do. The consensus, I think, now has come down to Justin's getting traded, Caleb's getting picked.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And the comments from Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus the last couple of days at the Combine do very little to, like, change that narrative. And, you know, if you're going to trade Justin, you're probably going to do it in the next week or two.
Yeah.
It's what they did last time. They went to the Combine. They put up their little – they put their table up and sat there and said, make us an offer, and all the teams walked by. And then they basically settled with Carolina before they left, and they spent the next – like week haggling with them, and they had a deal. I would think something similar to that will happen again.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, there's buzz down here for, you know, the second administration of Radio Raheem, and they're like, yeah, you know, let's do it. Let's go. Let's be the first NFL team to be black, black GM, black head coach, black head quarterback. So, or black starting quarterback. So
well, and he's from Atlanta, right? Yeah. Or the area.
Yeah. And there'd be, you know, and Jason Ritter is very, very frustrating to watch, and he would be an immediate upgrade over that guy. And him and Bijan together in a backfield, like that's a box office draw.
Yeah, they might actually throw passes to Kyle Pitts.
Yeah,
be a nice change pick.
Oh, right.
Apparently,
yeah,
Kyle might want to actually.
Yeah,
there was some thought that maybe him and Arthur didn't exactly hit it off. And effort might have been a little lacking late in the season. Yeah, as far as Desmond Ritter, I can tell you as a Bear fan who was watching the Bears game, and I had on the Red Zone was keeping tabs on that big Carolina Atlanta tilt late in the season.
Ooh.
Ritter threw the single worst interception that anybody threw all season, down by one. I think they were down 7-6. With like 5 minutes to go in the game. There was no offense in that game at all. Was that the game where Eddie Pinheiro got hurt? No, I think it was the next week. Eddie got hurt in warmups, and then Carolina played a whole game and couldn't kick. Couldn't kick extra points.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, you could tell just by keeping tabs. When the Falcons score, if they kick a field goal, they're going to win the game. And they're down at like, it's first and 10 from like the 15, and he rolls out. It's first down. And just blindly chucks one to about the 5, where it almost didn't get intercepted because 3 Panthers were fighting over it.
Right.
And I just thought, Jesus, I don't know how you can. And Raheem basically said that, right? Like, this is a playoff caliber team. They had terrible quarterback play last year.
Right, yeah,
He just came right out and said it. Basically, if we had a better quarterback last year, I wouldn't have this job. Arthur
would
still
be. Yeah. I went to the game they played. They hosted the Bucks here in Atlanta, and it was maddening because he was playing terribly, and still the Falcons had a chance to win that game in like the last 3 minutes, and he blew it. But the frustrating thing is that, like, he's definitely a pro prospect. Like, he will make like incredible throws in tight windows where I'm like, yeah, I see why they're starting you. And then the very next play, he will throw the dumbest pass into triple coverage in the red zone. And you'll just be like, how did you not see those 4 guys all by themselves on the left side of the end zone with no Falcons receiver anywhere near there?
Yeah, there's somebody cut up all 10 of his interceptions. That's on. It had been running on Twitter, and they're all bad, but 9 and 10. Are mind numbing. Just like, holy shit. What were you possibly looking at?
Yeah. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but really, really rough to watch.
But see, I think this would be something that would work out for everybody then. Atlanta would get a good quarterback. They'd get their hometown guy. But Bear fans want a good situation for Justin because we genuinely like him.
Yeah.
That would be a good one. Vegas would not. There's a lot of rumors about the Steelers. That to me doesn't feel like a Steeler.
Yeah, and they're not aggressive like that. Yeah. They don't really. They stand pat. They load up on defense. My only thing with the Bears is that after having watched the Niners and watched them build every part of that team except for the quarterback until they you know, just threw up their hands and said, yeah, sure, let's take a flyer with the very last pick on that Purdy guy. It's like, A, none of these evaluations are going to mean anything in like 8 months' time. And B, like, they at least were smart enough to build out the rest of the team and say, like, you know, and have it be sort of like a championship caliber team, even with somebody like Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, running the offense. And I'm like, what is stopping the Bears from at least seeing how much of the rest of the team they can build before they're like, we're a quarterback away, yeah, and then make a move.
Right. But the timeline, though,
especially in the NFC, where there's, it's, you know,
yeah, all the good quarterbacks.
It's Dak and spare parts.
Yep. But you don't get to pick the timing on this. They had the number one pick last year. They didn't use it. They have the number one pick this year. You know, you can wait and build everything, and then you don't have an opportunity to get the quarterback.
That's
if it turns out
that's
Justin
fair.
Doesn't work out, then what do you know, you're rolling with Tyson Bagent.
Yeah.
You think you think Brock Purdy was, you know, he was Mr. Irrelevant. Whatever it was beyond Mr. Irrelevant is what Tyson Bagent was.
No, so yeah, that, and that's why we ran it 60 times against the Raiders and Getsy's over there now.
And that's the other thing about the building the quote unquote super team around a quarterback is if they draft a rookie quarterback, between that and Bagent, the Bears would be spending about $7 million a year on their entire quarterback room, where most teams are spending $35 or $40 million at least on their quarterback.
On
even
one guy.
Including the Niners, who have I don't know if they had to assume any of Darnold's contract, but you know, they at one point, well, they were literally just throwing darts at the wall. You know, they drafted Trey Lance. They could have picked Justin. They didn't. They took Trey Lance.
Yeah,
they had Jimmy, and then they brought Jimmy back.
Right.
You know, they signed him. He was on the street. Nobody wanted him. They said, come on, you play one more year for us, because he was in a cast for something. God
they
knows,
tried
Jimmy,
a Hail Mary
Jimmy
to get
Ball
Brady out of retirement. Yep. And they might have gotten him if he hadn't, I guess, joined the ownership group at the Raiders, something like that. So, yeah, they're clearly, like, extremely bullish on that position. But again, they did a really great job of building.
And if you want to get really cocky about the future of Caleb Williams, you could say, well, you can build the super team like the Niners did, or you can have the quarterback like the Chiefs.
Yes.
Did.
Yes. Well, yes.
That. Now, to me, that if you can get quarterback right, you're set for a decade, which the Bears has never done.
Yeah.
And that super team goes away because you're now paying that guy, but you've got that guy. And all of a sudden, you don't need Tyreek Hill anymore. And you don't need, he's throwing to guys you've never heard of. And Taylor Swift's boyfriend.
To New York Jets castoffs are making the heroic game-winning Super Bowl catches. And
So I think for most Bear fans, it's funny, right? I think a lot of Bear fans now have talked themselves into this. So if they go trade Justin, it just feels inevitable. And this Caleb better work out. But if they somehow kept him, Justin's a guy we all like. But I'll get back to this with Ryan Poles. If do you want to be looking, say 4 years from now, you're on the street, and you had a chance to draft C.J. Stroud and Caleb Williams, you didn't pick either one of them.
Yeah,
I think at some point you have to they keep handing you the gun. At some point you have to shoot it. I just feel like he's going to do that.
No, you're right. I mean, I will be happy if they draft Caleb. We were all really rooting for Justin, and I'll continue to root for Justin if he comes here. It'll be really easy, but you know, he just really wanted it to work out. I really wanted it for him to work out in Chicago.
All right, speaking of football a little bit, Peter King announced his retirement, kind of with an asterisk, though, because they said, what are you going to do now? He's just going to say, I might do something else. It's like, well, that's that really retirement. But one of his enduring legacies was Monday Morning Quarterback. And you wrote for Monday Morning Quarterback.
I did. It was a, Peter is such a unique figure in SI history because, you know, the mag, you know, what used to be the magazine. The magazine used to, you know, it's produced so many great writers, but he is easily the most generous of those stars in terms of, you know, the way that he shared his expertise, his contacts, his energy, his opinions, his access with his colleagues, with younger reporters, and then, you know, used his must-read platform and built it out into its own brand, its own vertical, to give younger writers like myself a shot to more space to cover the league. I remember the first big, the first story I did for him on MMQB. One of the first stories I did for him was about, you know, the perils and pains of being an NFL wide receiver and how, like, why they're wired to be so crazy because they know that they can affect the game in such a huge way, but have no control over the way or where and when they can affect the game, and how that redounds to their Hall of Fame selection. And I think at the time it was I think Chris Carter or gosh, who's the Heisman Trophy winning receiver for the Raiders for all those years, what was his name, who like had all those yards and had never won a Super Bowl, and or was in the Super Bowl, never won, and would like always be a Hall of Fame finalist and then not.
Oh, Tim Brown?
Tim Brown, thank you. Yes, Notre Dame's own, Tim Brown. Yep. And just like how, like, the frustration just continued. It's like he'd go from being the guy, like, asking for the ball, you know, maybe getting it five times a game, maybe getting it twice, maybe getting it no times, to like succeeding even despite that, and then having to go through this whole other thing when you're Hall of Fame eligible. And, you know, your stats look worse and worse as the game has opened up more and more offensively. And you thought that was a really good idea, and I went and I executed it. And it was like the first, one of the, my early Sports Illustrated stories that got a really big, got a really big response. And then on the heels of that, we got the idea to go check in on Lovie Smith after he was fired after his winning season, and like somehow convinced him to, let me hang out with, spend a Sunday with him at home watching games. And it was like the most amazing reporting trip that I ever had in my life. And I just like met a guy who was like nothing like the sideline sphinx that we had known for the better part of a decade. And it was amazing. And like that doesn't happen without Peter, without the MMQB, without Peter being like, there's so much more, so many more stories, so many more personalities in this game than just sort of like the top line guys that we cover for the magazine or even on the website, that we could really just do a whole like deeper dive into football in its own separate website. And of course that proved to be a smash too.
Yeah. Before he started that, ESPN wanted him very badly, threw a lot of money at him. And instead he re-signed at Sports Illustrated. But that was a big part of his deal. He wanted to do this website, and he wanted to give other writers a chance. He basically took a lot of the money he would have gotten at ESPN, and he used it because he felt like he had enough money and to give other people a chance. And, I mean, who does that? You'd like to think lots of people, but they don't.
Yeah. Truly generous. And then also with, like, his readers. I mean, SI was unique in that its readers had this sort of parasocial relationship with the writers. You know, we'd get like these like phone book thick stacks of letters each week from readers just reacting to different stories and just writing these very heartfelt, notes to the actual writers. And, you know, usually like that was a one way street, but Peter opened the other lane and actually, you know, wrote back to his to the people that wrote to him, would host his readers whenever he was in different towns. You know, they would go on beer crawls together or like meet up at breweries or meet up before games. Like, he was truly a writer of the people.
He also had one of the greatest tweets of all time, the day Robin Williams died.
Yeah, yeah.
He said to his restaurant host, "God, did you hear about Robin Williams?" The guy said, "No." He said, "Died, killed himself." Thought he would cry. My joke about that was, because he said, "God, did you hear about Robin Williams?" I said, "Man, Peter eats at the fanciest places."
But yeah, like, he's, you know, he did so many memorable stories, you know, when, like, I remember the one he did when Reggie White was a free agent. It was a huge SI cover. You know, he hung out, he did a whole like travelogue with John Madden on the cruiser. Yeah, like, just like stuff like that is just like, people don't realize, like, that's what NFL reporting used to be, not just like shefty news breaks. Like, you really got a real flavor of the people and the personalities. I mean, and he also like loved Brett Favre back when Brett Favre was lovable, and spent a lot of time with him. Like, he had a real knack for endearing himself to the league stars. Got behind the Patriots Iron Curtain, was able to do you know, get some real insight into Belichick and what made him tick and how that franchise worked. And, you know, that's, a lot of that is gone now.
Yeah, and you see that in, you know, breaking news tweets, when people will take Adam Schefter's tweet and Ian Rappaport's tweet and put them right next to each other, and they're the same, because literally just an agent or somebody sent them, and they verbatim, they're cutting and
calling them
the
at the same time, texting them at the same time, and it's a race
within
to
a
see
minute of each other. They
right,
have
yeah, how many seconds they can beat the other butt.
It's like, right, that's great. You know, I could not have lived if I hadn't got, if I'd gotten that news 8 minutes later, and you could have actually had a thought about it before you just pushed it out.
Right, right.
Yeah, you said, so your most recent piece for The Guardian is about baseball's uniforms.
Yeah, I saw the uniform, the disastrous uniform rollout. How unfortunate that, like, the poster boy for this is literally the game's biggest star, Shohei, is in, with his shirt tails visible under his pants. I mean, come on. But I sort of didn't appreciate what a train wreck of a company Fanatics is, because it's been, you know, like, the last jersey that I bought of somebody was probably like at Sports Mart. Like, that's how long, that's how long it's been since I've worn another man's number. But like, all of these horror stories about people ordering t-shirts with like, you know, the crooked jersey number or the player name, or like the windbreaker that's just like a plain windbreaker that was supposed to have like Eagles logos on it.
Or it's a, like, a San Francisco Giants shirt that has the New York Giants NY on it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's
the
just
poor
like,
guy in the sweatshop didn't know the difference.
It's just like, this is like, you're charging $200. The thing that I found out that really blew my mind is that they charge extra for like the advertising patch that you put on the jersey now. Like, so we're paying to support already bought advertising. Like, this is,
well, I'm not buying the Cub jersey unless I get the payday loans patch.
Right.
I don't want it. I want to be authentic.
Yeah.
Well, and even that, so even on the real jerseys, a lot of the embroidered patches are not embroidered anymore. They're at least sewn on, where though the ones you're going to buy, if you buy the cheap version, which is well over $100, or the medium version, which is $200, that's just ironed on. It's probably going to fall off.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. It's Fanatics is, they've been eating up, they have like the exclusive contracts with everybody now.
Yeah.
And so you really don't have a choice. You go, you know, if you go to, if you want to buy a Cubs shirt, you go to Cubs.com, you're buying it from Fanatics. If you go to NFL Authentics, you're buying it from Fanatics.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. And they're like, when the Cubs traded everybody away, I decided I was going to follow Chris Bryant and to the Giants. So the day after, you could order a Chris Bryant jersey. I didn't want to spend a lot of money on it, but I did. Yeah. That thing didn't show up until November. It took him three months. You know, the season's over. He's not even a Giant anymore. The t-shirt arrives.
Now you got a collectible. Congratulations.
Yeah, I've got a Cubs shirt that the screen printing is off center.
Hmm.
It's just, you know, you don't even want to. You can't buy anything sight unseen from them. So now you got to go to a store and buy it with the extra markup because then at least you can do your own quality control and be like, all right, this doesn't completely suck. But it seems like there's so many unforced errors with the uniform. Like, honestly, to most people, if they just hadn't screwed up the nameplates on the back, if they had left those the same, most people wouldn't have noticed and they wouldn't have cared.
Yeah.
But everybody looks ridiculous now. It looks like MVP Baseball 2004, when they first figured out how to put the name on the back of the player, and they had to do this like weird arch, and they had to use the same font for everybody. That's what you're getting now.
Right.
And so I've heard two different, maybe, I'm sure you probably got the real story, you can tell me, two reasons why they had to change the size of the letters.
Yeah.
One was that the fancy fabric, they lightened it so much that then they didn't want to put the old, bigger letters back on because they felt like, A, it would be uncomfortable for the player, but B, they're adding weight back. It's like, well, how much different does a 3-inch letter weigh?
It all goes back to Formula One. Yeah, we want our players to be as light as possible.
But the other one that I tend to believe more is they moved the MLB, the logo on the back. Mm-hmm. Used to be right up, I don't even know what you call it, and that's not the placket, but whatever's up there, it was pretty close to the top. And they had a lot of room for the name. They've moved it down now under where that seam is, and they don't have as much room to put player names. So they scooted them down, and that's why they went with the ridiculous, the extra arch in the space.
The rainbow.
And I tend to believe that one. I think they told MLB this would be more prominent on the back.
Right.
And they said, we'd like that. Because they really could fix, this is a thing they could easily fix. Now, not maybe for the retail people right away, but certainly for the players. Like, by opening day, you could fix this. You could go back, you basically let the clubbies use the old letters that they have drawers full of. And sew those back on the uniform. And most fans wouldn't notice, and this would go away. But they don't seem to want to do it. Because as much as players would like to think we care about how much they could customize the pants and how guys with big asses can get extra room and us, we don't really care about that.
Yeah.
I don't really want to see San Francisco Giant utility player Casey Schmidt's balls. Like you could clearly see in his picture. I don't want to see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he also could wear sliding shorts. Wouldn't kill him.
Yeah. Yeah,
mostly
right.
For the fans, fix the names on the back, make it more aesthetically pleasing for us, and then the players can duke out the rest of it.
It's like you remember hearing so much about the NFL when they moved to Thursday night games, all the testing that they did on the uniforms and how they would look on those primetime broadcasts, and then of course like Oregon and Nike and like all of the testing that they do, and it's just like the man hours and tens of millions that are invested to make sure that this like television billboard is like clearly visible on television, and meanwhile Major League Baseball's like just move this down, move this, but like how bad can it be? They're really small when you're sitting up in the bleachers, so as long as you can kind of make the numbers out, it's fine. It's more proof of like how much Rob Manfred hates his sport.
Well, thankfully he gave us 5 years heads notice before he retires. He lets us all know. So we throw him a big party.
Yeah.
But even it's funny, you made me think of this. Even for all that testing, it's the Thursday night game for the NFL is when they broke out the color rush.
Yes,
And they had, I think it had to be like the Jets and the Bills, right? And the Jets were all green and the Bills were all red. And colorblind people
couldn't say,
They couldn't tell what the hell was going on, because if you're red-green colorblind, it was just all weird, and they, after the game, they're like, maybe we won't do that again.
Yeah.
I remember there was an Illinois-Wisconsin game where Illinois wore their all-orange uniforms, basketball, they wore their all-orange uniforms, and Wisconsin wore all red. And there were people complaining they couldn't tell the difference between the two on the court. Yeah. And I was like, you need to get a new TV.
Yeah.
You should be able to tell the difference between red and orange. I watched the game. I could tell who.
Yeah.
Get a better TV.
We're in 4K now. That should really pop.
Right. Okay, so Saturday night, for some reason. Sorry, I set my dog nuts here.
No, go for it.
Saturday, for some reason, is the first race of the F1 season in Bahrain.
Bahrain, yes, we're back, and, baby.
Yeah, it's not a terribly long off season. Never. But
well,
I've had a
the
chance.
Off season itself was so eventful that it doesn't feel like there was much of an off season because so much happened since the end of the.
So you haven't had a chance to see Drive for Survive yet.
No, not
I've
yet.
I've seen it. I pounded all 10 over the course of like 3 nights. And one of the things you'll notice when you watch it is there's a few things. Now, you've probably seen one thing went viral immediately, and as soon as I saw it, I enjoyed it so much. Second episode, it's Christmas time, and they go to Christian Horner's house with him and Ginger Spice, his wife, mm-hmm. Jerry Howell, and Father Christmas is there. And Father Christmas asks the Horner kids, has your dad been a good boy this year? And I don't know. What I'm hoping is I hope that really wasn't in it before. And then right as they were getting ready to release the season, he got accused of all the stuff. And they immediately re-edited it.
Yeah.
Because I would love that. If somebody's like, oh, I've got a clip for this.
Yeah.
Put it in.
Remember that thing we cut? It's back in now.
There's also an entire episode dedicated to Lewis Hamilton re-signing with Mercedes. And there is a lot of stuff in there about how he flirted with Ferrari. And for a while, Mercedes thought maybe he would go to Ferrari. But Toto Wolff was like, no, he would look bad in red. And he loves us. And he's like a son to me. And he would never leave. And you're watching all this knowing. You see, actually, this is clearly fake. You know, some of the stuff in Drive to Survive, they do catch with live mics and stuff. Other stuff tell.
Yeah.
So they have a scene where Lewis goes in. And he sits across the desk from Toto. And they talk about the contracts and how Toto was so happy that Lewis will be around for 2 more years and blah, blah, blah. Mm. And Lewis is like, oh, you know, how could I ever possibly leave? And then we realized that what he signed was a 2-year deal that was a 1+1.
Yeah.
And that allowed him to just get the hell out of town after 1 year and actually go to Ferrari. So when you watch that, it's really funny to see, you know. And they kind of hint at, you know, I think a big reason why Lewis is leaving is that Mercedes would only give him a 2-year contract. They didn't want to commit longer than that. And he looks at Fernando Alonso and he's like, I'm not.
I can keep going.
I've got 5 years left.
I was younger than him. Yeah. I was a rookie when he was a champion already.
So there's that.
Well, I looked at it like he was going to go to Ferrari in the beginning. And Niki Lauda was the one that's like, I know I'm a Ferrari guy, but we're actually like got something cooking at Mercedes that's going to be way better. You know, we're going to crush them for like the next decade. So if you want to keep winning, get on the winning team. And so I always felt like after Lauda died, you know, that was like a huge loss for him and for for Mercedes, frankly, that I felt like, you know, there's, of course, he's going to circle back to that option. That's going to be unfinished business. But yeah, the more Mercedes foundered, you know, last year again, you know, he was really frustrated with the technical direction that they took after, you know, almost screaming to them that that, you know, they were on the wrong path. You know, Toto ignored him and they fell even farther behind. And you know, he was back to having to elevate an inferior car, and you know, like did it brilliantly as ever. But you know, the Red Bull's just getting faster and faster, and you know, Ferrari is the one team that can stay halfway close to them.
You know, it's funny they had a bad car in 22, and they basically were ready to scrap it and start all over. And then George Russell won the race in, where did he win? Brazil? Singapore? Wherever he won.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh no, we must be on the right thing. And Lewis at the time was like, okay, it's good on one track.
Right. Yeah.
You know, what about the other 22? You know, we really should change. What about
the half season we spent porpoising around all over the place?
Getting out of the car, it looked like Fred Sanford. He couldn't stand up. Yeah.
My back has been jackhammered for the last like 3 hours. Yep. What about that?
Just slamming me repeatedly into the tarmac.
Yeah.
So that's they do a good job of kind of setting that up as to why Lewis was. You know, it wasn't just, I want a new challenge, I want to do whatever, when he was talking to Ferrari. And then there was the whole thing with Fred Vasseur, and Fred had known Lewis since he was, of course, he'd known everybody since they were like 12. And Fred getting asked, like, right in front of Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz about signing Lewis for the next season. That's one of the amazing things to me is that apparently there's no such thing as tampering in Formula One. There's a whole episode about my favorite guy, Zach Brown. Oh, I just
love Zach.
I hate Zach so much. Oh, I think he's just a scumbag. Anyway,
really, Zach's a really cool guy.
He seems because I know so phony to me. On my buddy Otmar Snaps.
Oh, Otmar. I feel like that's friendly, but I just remember like what a shambles McLaren was in when Fernando was there and the way that he sort of tied it in with them in with the IndyCar program and the way that he's developed both of those teams in parallel to where they're like super competitive. Like he actually is really, really good at what he did.
Okay.
I have a lot of respect for it.
You told me last year, I don't like Pierre Gasly. And you told me Pierre's cool.
Pierre's just awesome.
A fussy French complainer. That's
There are other fussier non-Frenchies than
there is a great there's a great episode about him and Esteban Ocon and how much they've hated each other for most of their lives.
Esteban is a much fussier Frenchie. Yeah. They're a perfect example.
There's also the I don't want to spoil it for people who didn't actually pay attention to the season, but Otmar gets canned, and the guy that takes over for him is a guy named Bruno. What is Bruno's last name? I wrote it down here because I can never remember it. Now I can't find it. Anyways, Bruno. Anyway, he's a very French guy. And when he does his like talking head interviews, he could not be more slumped. He's basically like his neck is like pouring back into his polo shirt.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is the guy that's the face of Alpine now? He speaks very little English, which, it doesn't really matter when you run a French F1 team, but it makes it a little tough to appeal to the American audience. Oh, anyway, so the thing about tampering, so there's an episode about McLaren, and they got off to a terrible start. They were awful. And then they got some upgrades, I think, about Canada, I think. They would give them to Lando, and then poor Oscar had to wait for like three races before he'd get them, but then they'd finally give them to him. But early when they're struggling, Lando was in the final year of his contract, and there's Christian Horner, basically just talking about how great it'll be when they're able to sign Lando and put him with Max.
Right.
So, number one, he's got a driver. He's got Checo, my little buddy. Basically just being shoved out the door. Plus, this guy has a contract with another team, and nobody cares. They talk about each other's drivers publicly. There's clearly it's not a thing in racing. In American sports, you never get to do that. Guys get in trouble for the stupidest little. What coach says something too nice? Greg Popovich says something too complimentary about a player on the other team, and he gets fined by the NBA for tampering. Horner's basically over there measuring Lando for a suit, and they don't have any problem.
Texting him like, "Hey, we just got a new seat in. You want to come in and get sized up for it?
New fire suit. You up?"
Yeah.
But some interesting things about this season, the driver's lineup that finished last season is the driver lineup that is starting this season. Poor little Nick DeVries is the only guy from the start of last year who lost his seat. I was shocked actually that Logan Sargeant is still driving for Williams. He didn't score a point last year.
Well,
you're right. 20 races, and you don't score a single point? in a car that was clearly better than it had been.
Yeah. I feel like I predicted he would score last year. I'm a little disappointed that he didn't do it, but you know, he's still young.
Wrong. He scored 8 points. He had 1 point.
Okay.
Well, DeVries was the only guy who didn't get any. Well. Liam Lawson scored more.
Oh yeah. I think it was like a really bad attrition race that he wound up finishing exactly 10th.
One where his was the only car that wasn't on fire at the end. And
yeah.
He finished 10th.
Yeah.
He was too far behind all the accidents.
Yes.
So he was easily able to drive
basically
around.
Basically, he skirted trouble. but you know, like I give him the benefit of the doubt.
I like having American. I was sure watching LSU, just like, there's no way Logan's hanging out of the seat. And then he did.
Yeah. And it's funny because I thought like if he was driving like Nick DeVries, they'd be talking about him. About pairing him with George. And I feel like, you know, now that the cat's out of the bag, he really has an opportunity to like assert himself and make a case for it. Cause I'm just like, man, imagine an American driver at Mercedes. Yeah. That'd be so huge. So this season is a real opportunity for him. If he, you know, he takes advantage of it.
There is an interesting, Danny Ricciardo, who was,
we love him.
There's two whole episodes. Yeah. I mean, he's Mr. Drive for Survive.
Two
guys who are in every
Mr.
episode.
Mr. Congeniality. We love him. Yeah.
Are Christian Tom Warner, King. Who shows up all the time in this. I mean, he's in every single episode, which is amazing. Because if you watch the entire season.
Well, he's the big bad, so you need him in every episode. Yeah.
But if you watch this entire season, you really have to pay attention. If you didn't know what happened in F1 last year, you'd have to really pay attention to realize that Max Verstappen won 19 races. Max is in it twice, I think. He's playing pickleball in one scene with a couple of the other drivers. And then he has like one talking head that's clearly he did not sit down for Drive to Survive. It's from like a
I don't think he does. No. Like he won't be followed, he won't participate. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's just not in it, which is funny. But Christian, anything. They don't care. Yeah. They have a mic on him when he goes in to tell. Danny is the third driver at Red Bull going into the season. His old team, he's back. He's been
right.
You know, he left for Renault and then on to McLaren, and he got kicked. He basically got fired at McLaren with 6 races to go, and they let him still drive the car around.
Yeah.
He was doing a podcast with Will Arnett. No, he was going to do. He did like a Manning cast with Will Arnett for the Miami race, and was going to do it for both Vegas and Austin. Except he was in a car by then.
Yeah.
So Nick DeVries is the guy who he had gotten his seat when he filled in for Ocon. Somebody had to get their appendix out.
It was Mercedes, I thought. I thought he filled in.
I think it was.
DeVries did.
I think it's either Albon or Ocon. I get them confused. I think it was Alex Albon. And at Monaco, I think. And he scored. Finished like 7th.
Yes.
And that put him this is a real driver. This is a guy. And little Helmut Marko just loved him. And so he got this slot with AlphaTauri, and then he didn't do anything with it for the first half of the season. And Red Bull is notoriously
grinds drivers
on their drivers. Half the grid has driven for them at some point and been fired.
They found 2/3 of those drivers on the grid.
Nick loses the seat, goes to Danny Ricciardo, everybody loves because he's Mr. Personality and has been a very successful driver. And second or third race out, there's an accident right in front of him in qualifying, and he can't avoid it. He hits the wall, he breaks his hand. Now he's out. And so, like the scene from the awful Gran Turismo movie, they cut to Liam Lawson, the emergency driver for AlphaTauri, on the sim. You know, basically looks like he's playing video games.
Yeah.
Give him a call. He's got to hop it to the track. He's got to, it must have been practice because he had to qualify, and he scored in the first race just like Nick DeVries and acquitted himself very well in 2 more races, and then Danny was finally ready to come back from having his pinky screwed back together, And so they create this drama about who's going to get that seat for next year. Is it going to be, right. you know, there's cute little Yuki Tsunoda, who has got to be like 5'2".
Yeah.
I'm always shocked. There's anywhere. There's a great shot in this of on the grid, I think in Vegas, of Shaq and Yuki.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Shaq is 4 feet taller.
I would watch that junior remake.
So then there's this drama about, well, you know, Danny has barely been back and now he's hurt and he's probably lost his seat and it's going to be Liam. And then you hear Christian, because even though he's the Red Bull principal, he's AlphaTauri now, Visa, Cash App, RB, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
They're all one big thing.
Yes.
And he just very matter-of-factly tells him it's going to be Danny and Yuki next year. And then the door opens up and Liam, whose dreams have been crushed, is, you know, walking out. He thought he finally got his shot, because he was the guy he talks about. He went to the academy because his family didn't have money. He couldn't, like, you know, he wasn't Lando or Max, whose parents threw thousands and thousands of dollars into making him a driver. And he'd made it. Yeah. And people were like, hey, this guy's pretty good. And he's just an extra driver again this year.
Yeah. It's rough business.
Yeah. So there's that. One thing I want you to watch for, mm-hmm. I guess my mind works in weird ways. When I'm watching this, I'm trying to figure out when they do the talking heads, when are these interviews? And the guy figure out is Will Buxton, because he wears the same sweatshirt in every single one. Now, either they're like, if you can wear this every time, that'll be really easy for us when we cut it together.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling he just at the end of the year, because he's Mr. You know, he sets everything up with his pontificate, wondering about something. He's like, gee, I don't know. Do you think maybe, Danny Ricciardo can't be very happy just basically being a glorified marketing person? Maybe later on in the season, a seat will open up. And then it does. And you're like, you filmed that in December. You didn't do that in April. So just watch for that. He's got the same wardrobe every single time. The other, they're in-house talking heads. Claire Williams has joined now, so she can give great expertise about what it's like to be running a team that can't score any points. She has a tremendous amount of experience doing that.
Poor Claire. You know.
And then Danica. For no apparent reason, other than Americans know
she is an accomplished...
And she's not bad.
A single seat driver who did, climb the F1 ladder in Europe. Like, she does have a background in this sport, but I just find her to be so. And it's, you know, like, there are other women in that sport who I find much more engaging talking about it, but she's such a damn squib. I just really can't. I do not look forward to the races that she is part of.
I honestly think she's there because they added the Vegas race. I think they felt like with three American races, they should have an American, and they picked her.
But she's don't fine, need an American.
But
they
she doesn't, no, we don't. And
the success of the sort of Sky broadcast proved that we will just take.
Yep.
You know, we'll just take it straight. You don't need to yankify this up for us. You know?
And I was really worried when ESPN re-upped that they had that Sky thing for cheap. They were paying like $5 million a year for that.
I think it was less than that.
They still don't pay a lot for TV money. It's like $75 million a year or whatever, which is a bargain for, you know. And I really worried that when they put real money into it, they were going to insist on... A lot
we
more
do
than
our own
Nicole
studio
Briscoe
show.
Telling us.
We got to have our own correspondence there. And
now all we get is at the very end, we get Nicole Briscoe telling us that, you know, mothers, you know.
I would rather have Nicole Briscoe be a part of that team than Danica Patrick. Nicole Briscoe, who's like, you know, who's married to a racer and, you know, has a racing that background and, you know, has reported in the sport and is. Like fun and engaging. Danica is just not the girl for this.
Nicole and Danica went to Rockton Hononega High School in Rockton, Illinois, together. Mm. And so did two of my other friends. And I think I told you this on the last time. So I had two friends who were, they knew Danica. They were in the same class as Danica.
Okay.
And they are best friends. They've been best friends since they were little kids. And if you talk to one of them hated Danica and the other one loved Danica.
Yeah.
Just really funny. So like, I thought you guys were best friends. You could so we don't have to we don't have to have all the same friends. Like, okay.
Right. Yeah.
One I think was just like was so happy to see that her just leave for England to go become a racer. It's like good. Just go away.
Yeah, good luck with all that.
Yeah, I was worried then that they were going to want to, like, American-fy things. And they haven't, because then they shouldn't. The Sky thing is, I mean, it's the reason I'm an F1 fan now. I watched a documentary in 2020, like everybody else, when we were all locked in our houses. And I was like, this is pretty interesting. And then when you watch the broadcast, I'm constantly amazed you see everything. It's amazing to me. You know, on a 3-mile-long track, they don't miss anything. They have a camera everywhere. And then they have cameras in the car and on the car and flying over the track and or whatever. And you see the, you know, every possible, like, bit of data you need is on the screen. And they do just such a good job of, you know, picking what audio to hear when you hear it. Sometimes the stuff, you're like, ooh, I can't believe they put that on. So it's not all, you know, like, well, we can't put that. This is juicy. We can't use it. They'll put it on. You know, they'll have Max screaming at, you know, GP, blah, 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 whatever it is. Whatever the guy is who talks to him, they'll scream at each other, which is fun. I don't want them to screw it up and Americanize it. It's perfectly fine the way it is. Plus, I like the fact I need to watch my little 30-minute wrap-up with Ted Kravitz, where he just walks up and down the pit lane and goes over his notebook and just tells us all the stuff that he learned during the race.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, oh yeah, you remember the structure that was here an hour ago? Yeah, that's on a truck now. I always love to see like how quickly they break everything down when Ted's doing those that sort of like cool down.
He'll show you. He loves logistics. He'll show you like the shipping crates and like they'll be like they're in one. It's like this isn't actually going. The next race is like in Singapore, but this is not going to Singapore. The Singapore crate is already in Singapore. This one is going somewhere else. And he's telling us this, and I'm like, well, that's stupid, and I'm oddly fascinated by it. So give me more of that, Ted. I like it.
But also, I feel like they do a better job than the American racing series, and I don't know if it's the draws or whatever, but like, you know, you sort of come in on the back of Drive to Survive and the human drama, but they really get you invested in the science and the math and in terms of like, you know, the tire choices, you know, just, you know, red, yellow, white, you know, like we know that these are not like the same types of compounds from race to race. We know that they sort of like, well, sometimes they are, sometimes one of them is, you know, so like they get you really invested in that and just like the math and like how fast somebody is lapping and how many laps that they have to do in order to like catch somebody to be able to use DRS, the whole DRS strategy. So like you really sort of, you know, they turn you into a math nerd.
Once you
find your guys that you're rooting for, that you're like, okay, I'm really, like, I can't go in anywhere because in 8 laps,
you know,
Lewis is going to be in DRS range and then he'll have like a podium spot, you know? So it's like they, you know, and it's probably because, you know, the American series are racing on ovals where it's like less, where that drama is like harder to watch play out because you can have a bunch of cars in a grouping and like, you know, the person who's like leading the pack could actually be, you know, the last car on the actual pylon. And it's like it's much more difficult to sort of like fathom what's going on. But also the sport, at least in NASCAR, you know, there's more bumping and banging and contact, and like Formula One is so much more driven by, you know, precision and timing that it sort of raises the stakes of those little battles within battles.
And the cars literally can't handle it.
Right. Like,
those two tires touch, somebody's got a puncture. Somebody's out.
Right. Yeah.
It was funny. Watching Drive to Survive this season, it was a lot like watching races last year, which was, you know, okay, we see Max in the open, and then we won't see him again until the end. And that's how it was a lot of the races. You would watch, and by lap three, Max has opened up a 4-second lead over everybody. And the camera's not going to be on him again until he's coming around the last turn and the fireworks are going off, because that's not interesting anymore. It's all the other people are actually racing. Max is driving.
Right, yeah.
Everybody
yeah.
else is racing.
Yeah, that's so what I miss about 21 and the undercut, like they were so close to the Mercedes and the Red Bull, and how with the pit strategies that they would use, the fact that Red Bull was nailed every single pit stop that they made, and usually Max would be the one who would make errors in the field, or there'd be some engineering snafu or something. They were so close to the ragged edge. When you open up a 4-second lead, you can basically do whatever you want and not affect the race. That just puts more pressure onto hey, where's Checo? Why is he 4 seconds? Why isn't he 4 seconds behind the first car?
Yeah, has anybody ever taken more shit for finishing second than Checo? I mean, he was, everything was a crisis, and they, was he going to lose a seat during the season? That's for the longest time, he was the only other driver who'd won a race.
It's only other driver who'd won a race, easily the best teammate, the best sort of the blocking, blocking back that Max has ever had. And they just shit on this guy every opportunity that they get.
I mean, Max's asshole dad, Jos, we joked about it.
Yes,
Checo won a race and they showed Jos, and he could not have looked more pissed.
Yeah.
He's just buddy, your kid wins every week.
He's going to win all the other races. Let him have one moment. One moment.
We're so tired of hearing the Dutch national anthem. Please let him play the Mexican one.
Yeah, let's spice this this gala up a little bit. Golly.
Yeah, it's an interesting sport. It's it ticks all the boxes of a secondary sport that I will follow. Most of the races are in the morning. The real sports haven't started yet. Racing and enjoy
it's so great in NFL weekends because you have that, and then it just rolls right into the pregame shows.
It's time limited. There's literally a window that they have to finish the race in, or they'll start lopping laps off of it. The only thing that can screw that up sometimes is rain.
Yeah,
but once they start racing,
and even that, so they'll be "Look, we only have time for 20 laps." Or two, or which race is that in Belgium a couple of years ago where they're we'll do one lap, and and the finishing order was the starting order.
Yeah. Well, that's what they changed, and then in 22 when Max won, he didn't know he won.
Yeah.
Because they had changed that formula, everyone assumed they were going on they instead of getting full points if you didn't get X amount of laps, because it was ridiculous to give somebody 25 points for basically winning pole and taking one successful lap, and then the weather got bad and they gave it to him. So everyone thought he was 1 point short of winning the championship. The only people who seemed to know were the Sky Sports people who were running the thing on the side. They put the new points total and they had him clinched, but nobody believed it until he got down to the, Parc Fermé, and he's being interviewed by, David Coulthard, I think, and he tells him, and Max doesn't believe it. He's like, no, I need one more point. He's like, no, you don't. They just told me in my earpiece that you won. It's been so weird. So he's won three titles, and his first one is incredibly contentious.
Two and an asterisk.
But that's the only one that he actually was driving in first place when he crossed the finish line that he knew he won. Because then the second time he's in Japan and he thinks, I've got a lot of points, but I still need another one next week. And he didn't.
Yeah.
And then this year, because they added the weird sprint races, he finishes third in a sprint race on a Saturday in Spa. I think it was Spa, wherever he was. And he wins the regular season championship.
Yeah.
It's odd. It's funny because the whole thing in 21 was about F1 wanting there to be drama. They wanted the championship to finish on the track with two guys racing, which is why they basically ignored their own rules. And then the next 2 years, they've got the most anticlimactic championships ever. So basically,
one wonders if the regulations will fix that. I have a feeling they won't. Red Bull appears to still be spending heavily on R&D outside the rules and just sort of paying the penalties or not logging the hours or whatever. I mean, you know, they're all sort of like operating outside.
And then last year, you know, so last year they had the wind tunnel penalty.
Yes, oh, yes, no. Yeah.
And they ask Adrian Newey about it, and he's like, well, we basically, I love that they number their cars with RB19. The RB19 is such a good car. We stopped developing it like six races in, and we were already working on it.
So
really it didn't affect us because we had lots of extra time to work on the car because everybody else was still tinkering with the current car, and ours was so perfect, we just left it alone, and we started working on the new car. And there even some thought that they were trolling Mercedes when they did the rollout. You know, Mercedes had the whole thing with the side pods and the like the vertical opening for the air to go through. Well, the Red Bull has a vertical opening for the air to go through now. And they asked Newey about it, and he was basically like, well, everything Mercedes, all their ideas weren't bad. everything else sucked. We like this. So we put this on the car, and then they can stare at it every week as it goes around. It can remind them of how horribly wrong they got their version of this car.
Yeah.
So I guess the last thing we'll talk about is people who've made it to this point. Is the fact that there was all this controversy coming into the season, or just the last month, about the team principal, Christian Horner, the guy who's married to... I told you the very first episode of Drive to Survive I watched, I'm sitting there, and I'm like, you know, they go to this pastoral English, you know...
Or the ranch or whatever that they got out there.
And
he choppers out of, right, at one point.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, it's funny, that guy's wife looks like Ginger Spice. And it was. I realized it's a different people with a different, it's a lot of money in this.
Yeah.
So he, first we heard he was under investigation for, I forget, Red Bull gave it some ridiculous, they basically made it sound like he was too mean to a female employee at Red Bull and she had complained. That was the term they used made it seem like that.
Yeah.
And then there was all this stuff. Corporate
got involved. Yeah. There was like a whole, they made it seem like he had like an inappropriate sexual relationship with an employee. And then that got downgraded to he was mean to a female employee.
And there's a whole thing about, so the founder of Red Bull, Diederik Mannschitz, died a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And Christian and him, he loved Christian because he was the golden boy.
Right.
And Christian has lost some, he doesn't have the same support.
Right.
And not only that, but Red Bull Racing is 51% owned by these guys in Thailand and 49% by the energy drink dudes. And so how is this all going to shake out, an investigation? And in the middle of this, Red Bull had their launch where they're showing off the new car. And so I watched it because I wanted to see if Christian was going to be there. Not only was he there, he never left the stage. Like if they were supposedly like going to downplay his role while the investigation, they didn't do it. And they also had him, they had a female presenter. So he's up there with a female, and then they brought two female drivers from their academy or whatever out to be with him. They were very clearly like, look, he's not being mean to these women right in front of him.
And look at his harmless interactions with women.
So I'm watching like, well, clearly this dude is not getting fired, right? I mean, you wouldn't have done this. Yeah. But then supposedly there was, there's new allegations.
Too much money.
New allegations. He's been sexting and he's been all this stuff. And then everybody's like, oh, they're really going to get him. And then they didn't fire him and they didn't fire him. And then a couple of days ago, the investigation was coming to a close and they put him on a plane to Bahrain for the first race. It's like, well, they're not flying him to Bahrain to fire him. You could fire him in England at Milton Keynes. You don't have to fly him there. And then big shock, he's been exonerated of all the charges and he's fine.
Of course.
So then today,
nothing sticks to those guys.
Today we're recording this on Thursday. Today then somebody leaked to like all of the F1 press supposedly the WhatsApp messages that he sent to this.
I haven't seen those yet. Okay.
And some of them are screenshotted. You can see them on Twitter. And the ones that are screenshotted on Twitter, they seem awfully fake.
Okay.
In fact, there's two pictures like. he's the worst sexter in the world then, if they're real. There is one. There's a really funny one where he talks about how much he loves Cocoa Puffs, which has already been memed.
I thought you were going to tell me it was going to be like, if you want to be my lover, yeah.
And there are pictures of him, but they're thankfully not little Christian. It's big Christian. It's like selfies sent. But then somebody has found out that you can, the one of the selfies is actually, you can find the original picture.
You can do a reverse image search.
And they aged him a little bit. Like they took the thing and they put an older head of him on it. And so that everybody's pretty sure they're bullshit.
Okay. All right. So I won't go.
But the F1 wants to, the F1 wants to know, and the FIA and everybody else. But, I think somebody wants you to feel like he's under siege again. And
yeah.
I think Red Bull is basically like, now we've got lots of races to win.
We're fine. Yeah. Now, when he starts losing, which, you know, could be a while, we'll revisit some of this. But, he built the program. Yeah. So, if he goes down, he's probably going to take the whole thing down with him. So.
There's
Helmut that. Is like right there, and I'm sure is not like nearly as technologically savvy as Christian is, and we already know some of the like the horribly vile things
yes.
that he said
Helmut's
to
a,
Helmut is to non-white yes, to his racist. Like non-white is, colleagues. Yep. If Helmut's is sticking around, I think Christian's going to be.
In fact, one of the things on Twitter was somebody put. The screenshot of the messages, but also then because apparently got emailed out to like 149 journalists and other people, and they put on it was I forget what they put like for the name it was like anonymous whatever, but then in brackets it was helmut.marco@redbull.com.
I'm sure he knows how to check that. Yeah.
You got Max's dad is a ugh, and then. I think it's funny that Max is not
his
married.
Dad, his father-in-law.
Right.
But this
is funny to me.
He's surrounded by all of these like loathsome individuals. Yeah.
That his father-in-law, who's a former racer, is referred to as his father-in-law, even though he's not married.
Nope.
But they're everybody always calls him his father-in-law, which is funny. And then I didn't know that she has a son with Nikki Marzipan or whatever. It's like this whole F1 thing, it's all this weird entangled.
Very, very incestuous world. Yeah. An incestuous world of nepotism. Yeah.
But there's a lot of thought that if Horner goes, then Adrian Newey, who's like the greatest car designer of the last generation of F1, has an out in his contract that he would immediately go to Ferrari.
Yeah.
Because he's almost gone to Ferrari twice before. Like he literally.
Well, I feel like now's the time.
Like almost had the red polo shirt pulled all the way down and changed his mind and went, okay, no, I'm going to stay.
Yeah,
and they don't want to mess all that up, so they'll just, you know. And what is Christian? It's very interesting to me what he really does. To me, it feels like he's the front facing person.
Yeah,
like you see him during races, looking at the screens and looking very concerned. But if they want to talk, if you need to interview him during the race, he's always willing to talk during the race.
Yeah.
And it seems like his real job is at the end of the race to congratulate Max for winning again.
No, I mean, he...
And then to take all the crap publicly. Like, he's the one who had to wear the whole cost cap thing. He's the guy who had to go out and get yelled at. He gets paid millions and millions and millions of dollars to get yelled at, which is fine. He's got a very punchable face. He's a perfect guy to have getting yelled at.
Yeah. Well, I feel like... I like Toto personally, but I feel like that applies more to him than to Christian, who really, like, does a fair amount of, like... sort of like setting and guiding the technical, like the development direction, you know, because like he's the guy that like built that team into a powerhouse, who like knows who like the really smart up and coming like engineers and designers are, who, you know, was like savvy enough to like grab Adrian Newey the first opportunity that he had to be like, you know, if I built you your ideal like design team, like how, you know, what kind of a thing could you put in like spared no expense, what kind of a car could you put together? And that's basically what's happened. Well, I guess that's what's happened within the cost cap, but
Well, and they clearly they're very good at identifying talented drivers.
Yes. I mean, yeah.
You know, they've got Max and Checo, but Albon and Pierre Gasly and Danny Ricciardo and Yuki Tsunoda and Carlos Sainz have all come.
Well, they were really the only team to. well, the first team to actually like create an academy, develop a farm system, and, you know, like basically do all of the driver development for the other teams until they started to build out their own programs.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just, what they're not great at is treating those guys.
Yes. Yeah. Because of that, they can just, you know, it's like, you know, the U.S. Olympic gymnastics, they can just grind through these people. You know, while they sort of like put Max really on a other level than everybody else. The system is there to serve Max right now.
Well, and it's hard to argue with.
Yeah.
He's a great driver.
He's fulfilling his teenage promise, that's for sure.
Yeah. And he's I find him oddly endearing, because I feel like he's just a race nerd. It seems like the only friend he has is Lando. Like, he has these awkward conversations with everybody else. And we know his dad's an ass. He's been screaming at him since he was two.
Yeah. he is a very nice guy personally. Like, you know, as an interview, like, he's extremely generous and, you know, thoughtful, and will, you know, if you stick to racing, he will tell you basically anything you want to know about his performance and sort of what he thinks about. Because I remember talking to him in Miami after that first race, and, you know, they all had a lot of opinions about how that course was set up. And I forget, it was like turns 14, that 14, 15, 16, the combo was like really problematic and dangerous. And they like, went to considerable efforts to repave it, to make those corners like less dramatic. And, you know, after he won that race so comfortably, and, you know, like Dan Marino gave him the trophy. It was a whole thing that he was just like, whatever, I'll do it. I'm happy to do it. But, you know, afterwards, you know, I was asking him about it, and he was like very complimentary of the way of like the effort that they made to fix the track and just like his own performance. And I was just like, you know, you're not the villain that they make you out to be. Yeah. Like, one-on-one, you're actually like a really decent guy. So
he was 17 years old when he ran his first race.
Yeah.
He's 26. He's been around forever. He's 26 years old.
I feel like he'll be better when he's like in his early to mid 30s, and he's like has a little bit more perspective. And, you know, he's accomplished as much as he wants to, because I don't feel like he's going for, you know, trying to catch Lewis or anything like that. I think, you know, he could win like one or two more and be like, I'm cool. I can go do something else now. I've given my youth away to this sport. I want to try something else.
Yeah. Well, and Lewis is a guy who leverages his fame and popularity for causes. I mean, part of what drives him to be successful is he's a great race driver, maybe the greatest of all time, but he also is a very socially conscious person who knows that when he keeps winning and his profile is up, he can advocate for things that he wouldn't otherwise have a platform for. Max isn't ever going to do that.
No, he's never going to do that.
It's just not, and that's fine. That's not his personality. It would be
at
weird
best,
if he tried.
Becomes like Vettel and he finds something like the environment to sort of care about, or maybe like youth drivers in general, but otherwise I don't see that for him.
Yeah. All right. Well, I kept you a lot longer than you probably thought I was.
No, it's all right.
I appreciate it. It's always fun.
Yeah.
And, I'm excited. I'm ready to see some guys drive. The thing I like about F1, it's not all left turns. They actually turn right on occasion.
And stop. Yeah.
Yes. And it took me, I will admit, it took me like three races to realize they weren't putting more gas in the car.
Yeah. No, they gotta make it work with that one tank. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Many of us have herpes.
This is rough, but it's also finished.
It's fitting. It's got to be done with one of the best games of all time. Just unbelievable. I mean, got to congratulate the Dolan family.